Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and I'm so happy to introduce my friend Allison to you all. Hi, Allison. Thanks for talking with us today.
Hi, Carla. Hi, everyone.
So I met Allison about a year and a half ago when I was working in Europe, and we had dinner with others at Supper in the Smoke, which to an American sounds very quaint, which is where a group of people get together once a month and have a dinner at a restaurant in London. So I met her, and I think I met two of your kids there, I think. And then the next day, I was heading to Heathrow and was on my way back to Kansas City. And I was in, I don't know if you remember this, Allison, but we were in the South Kensington tube station. And all of a sudden I hear,
I remember.
Yeah. You were like, Carla? And it was you. It was Allison. It was just incredible in a city of almost 9 million people to meet up with you the next day after I met you in this random tube station. I just loved that. And the chance to reconnect again before hopping on the tube. I thought that was so cool. So
it
Allison,
like, yeah.
It was amazing. I just couldn't believe it. So Allison, tell us about you. Introduce yourself. Tell us about your family and your job and what keeps you busy and all that.
Okay. So my name's Allison. I'm a mom to four amazing children. They're aged 11, 15, 17, and 19. And for a job, I work full time. They keep me super busy. I currently run a nanny share between, I think, seven families at the moment, and they have 10 children in total. So depending on their needs in a week, I might have four children in the morning and four or five in the afternoon, or three in the morning and two in the afternoon. And I drop them at school, pick them up from school. We hang out in the park. We go to museums, and we're just big kids. So I was LDS, so, 8 months old. But now I find myself, the last 2 years, I've been attending Community of Christ, and I was confirmed a member last October.
Oh, wow. So you've been a member for a full year now. Oh, no, just a month now.
A year.
A year and a month. That's awesome.
Yeah, October before last. Yeah, a year and a month.
And what congregation do you attend?
I'm at the Enfield branch in London, in England.
In England, that's right, all you Americans. She's British, if you couldn't tell. So, Allison, thank you. That's right. So thank you so much for that introduction. I'm really interested in your story. I've heard a little bit of this story so far, and I'm just really excited for our listeners to hear. So take it away. Tell us your story.
Okay, so my life began in East London. I'm the middle child of five children. My mum joined the church, the LDS church, when I was just 8 months old. My grandma also joined about the same time, but my dad never did. So I was raised in the church. I went along every Sunday with my siblings. Every Sunday we were there. We never missed a Sunday. And also a couple of times during the week, we went for different activities. Primary activities when we were children. Primary is for the children aged like 3 up to 12 years. And then for our youth activities from when we were 12 up until 18. So I was baptized when I was 8 years old. And church life was good. I loved it. I went to all the youth factories. We had camp, we had dance. It was the place to be as a youth. You know, so many friends, so many really good planned activities. When I got to age 14 to 18, I did a 4-year seminary course. Each year we would do one of the Old Testament, New Testament, 1 year Doctrine and Covenants, and 1 year Book of Mormon. So I did all that. I studied all those and graduated. And then when we're between the ages 12 and 18, the young women do what's called a personal progress. You have a little booklet and you set yourself goals that might be spiritual goals or physical goals, all different goals that you have to do so many amount during the year. And I completed that when I was 18. So that was kind of the youth part growing up until I was 18. And then when I was 18, I kept going to church. and I ought to be teaching the children aged 3 to 12 years. And from then, I'd always had a calling. There was never a time in my LDS church life when I wasn't heavily involved in a calling. I taught adult Sunday school, which was known as Gospel Doctrine. I was the primary president, in charge of overseeing and responsible for all the children and the teachers. I did that twice, 5 years each time. I was also the young women's president, twice did that. I also taught early morning seminary, which would take place in the chapel between 6 and 7 a.m., Monday to Friday. So I was just really busy, enjoying church life, fully involved, doing everything. When I was 24, I went to the temple. This is something, from childhood all the way up. It's all the songs, everything you sing. It's all about going to the temple. It's like the ultimate goal, you get to the temple. So when I was 24, I went to the temple to do my endowments along with my fiance, and we were married and sealed in a temple the next week. We continued to attend church and the temple. My husband was, if I'm honest, more committed to praying and reading the scriptures than I was. He used to really encourage me to, to do these things. Continued, had several call-ins then, and for a while he was the young men's president while I was the young women's president. So we worked together on different activities and things for the youth. 3 months after our marriage, I had an ectopic pregnancy. It was where the baby started growing in my fallopian tube instead of the place where it's supposed to be. This was almost dying, and this was kind of like my first real kind of spiritual experience. My husband at the time felt inspired to take me to the hospital. And I was like, no, I don't need to go to hospital. I'm fine. Everything's fine. And he was like, no, I really feel that I need to get you there. And luckily I went, because I collapsed there and was rushed to theatre. And the doctors had said that if you were not in hospital at this time, you would have died. So this was, at the time I was like, why? I've been faithful, doing everything you wanted me to do. And this is a righteous desire to have a child, and then you've let me almost die here. But at the same time, it was a kind of reflection, and to see that when I looked back on it, it was like I saw God's hand there, the way that for some reason he'd kept purpose to fulfill. So for 10 years of marriage, we continued to serve, attend all of our church meetings. We had quite a few challenges over those years. We lost a total of 5 pregnancies. I had another illness when my second daughter was 10 weeks old. I was in hospital for a while because I had pancreatitis that almost killed me, but survived. And we went on to have 3 children, took them to church. The oldest 2 were baptized by their dad when they were 8. Life was really good. Then in 2006, this is where things started to get difficult. So in 2006, it was 2 weeks before my last child was born. And my husband, who at the time was the elders quorum president, which is like all the that were in the ward, he was going to leave the family. And this is when I really began to struggle with church. At this point, it wasn't the theology that troubled me, but more the culture and the actions of some of the other members. So I'm there, I'm on my own with, at this time, my kids were 8, 5, 3 and a newborn. Life was far from easy. Yeah. I took my 4 kids to church every Sunday. 2 buses there, 2 buses back. I'd really had the need to be at church. I needed God every Sunday. I needed to have that spiritual upliftment. So I'd get my family up, which was no easy task, and we'd get to church. And this one particular morning, the bishop came up to me right at the start of the meeting, and he asked me if I would take my family, and he told me that some members had complained that my children made too much noise and that I disturbed them when I'd gone outside to feed my baby. At this point, I really wanted to leave. I just wanted to get up and leave. I felt so bad. But I stayed, and at the end of the meeting, I went and spoke to my bishop afterwards, and I said, the next time someone complains about kids, instead of listening to them and telling that mother to move with her kids, you know, tell them to, you know, to go and help the mother out, go sit with her, because, you know, that's what Christ would do. And then the next fast Sunday, I bore my testimony of Christ in 3 Nephi when he, you know, after a busy day of preaching, people were tired, but he took the time to bring the kids to him, each one, and bless them. Yeah, this was really difficult for me, because here I was thinking this is what Christ would do, yet people weren't doing it. They were making me instead to feel bad. But anyway, I kept going, but it got even harder. The LDS Church is great for married couples with children, but it's not so easy for singles or single parent families. At least that's what I've found. So the next thing that really upset me was I was sitting in a Sunday school lesson, and there I am after a hectic week with kids, you know, seeking some peace and some uplifting experiences at church. And the teacher starts talking about how the father and the priesthood holder are vital to the family. And without them, the children would grow up to be delinquents and end up in prison. So there I am on the second row, newly divorced, because my priesthood holder had abandoned our family. And everybody knew this. And I thought the rest of the congregation was going to back me up here, thinking, okay, it's just the way the teacher's thinking. And, you know, the congregation are going to back me up and say, no, it's not like that. But they sided with the teacher. And they quoted statistics at me. And once again, I found myself sat in church looking for Christ, but not seeing him. Then lots of other things happened that had me questioning. The children would come out of classes saying things like they were not a proper family because their dad wasn't present. They couldn't go to heaven if they weren't a proper family. This was particularly hard for me to hear from my youngest, Adam, because he'd never had his dad at home. And the family that he was experiencing was the only one that he'd ever known. So to him, it was completely normal and proper. These lessons continued. I think the theme for the year was like families or something. So there was a lot of emphasis on family, which my family was not, for no fault of our own. He stopped working completely. Around this time, I also realized at the temple that being single, I hadn't actually made any covenants with God. For those in the LDS background, they'll know that in the endowment, the men covenant to follow God and the women covenant to obey their husbands while he obeys God. And somehow up until now, I hadn't realized actually made a covenant with God. I'd only made a covenant to obey my husband as he'd, you know, covenanted to obey God. Yeah, that's what the temple was all about, making sacred covenants with God. And it really troubled me that I had not done that. And until this point in time, I just hadn't realized that these things are going on and things, you know, are okay. Until October 2012. And this was the toughest month of my life so far. So at this time, the kids are aged 6, 10, 12 and 15. I was working as a nanny 3 days a week. I was the primary president at the time at church, and I was about to sit my final exams for my psychology degree. I was under a lot of stress, and it was general conference time. There I was. I was ready to hear the words of the prophets and to get some spiritual upliftment and nourishment that I felt I needed. So I'm sitting listening to general conference, and there are two talks that kick off a massive faith crisis. Some people prefer to use the words, it was literally a crisis. The first talk was Elder Oates, and it was entitled Protect the Children. Oates talked divorce, about children, you know, and single parents being disadvantaged. And I get that now that, yeah, there is some disadvantage. There's a lot of disadvantage to being a child of a single parent. I get that now. But at the time, it just really bothered me. And this is a quote that he said that the words just stuck with me, and this really upset me. He said, church leaders have taught that looking upon marriage as a mere contract that may be entered into at pleasure and severed at the first difficulty is an evil, meriting severe condemnation. And those words just stuck with me, an evil, meriting severe condemnation. You know, I'd come to a conference to be uplifted and just felt so much judgment. I knew that all the members of my congregation were, and probably judging me as well as a divorcee. And then the next talk was all about temple standard. It talked about the temple and how everything had to be perfect. A huge stained glass window had a fault at the bottom. A tiny, I think it was like 2 centimeter piece of glass. It wasn't quite right. The talk was about how everything had to be perfect. And there was this huge stained glass window in this beautiful temple. But there was a fault at the bottom of the window that was discovered afterwards when inspectors were going around to have a look at it. And they discovered that there was this tiny 2 centimeter. And even though it was covered with bars, and so no one would actually see this little fault, it was decided that the whole window had to be replaced. Now, this was at a time when we didn't have much money. I always paid 10% of my tithing every week. There were many days when we didn't have money for food because tithing would always be paid first, always. And sometimes we didn't have any food. So there were days when we didn't have much money for food because I always paid tithing first. That always came first. But we would make what we called billet cakes. They're called billet cakes because the kid's surname is billet, and we made these little pancakes. So we'd call them billet cakes. And whenever money was tight and we didn't have much money, the kids will, you know, be excited. Come on, don't worry, Mum, we're going to make billet cakes. So they're kind of whenever we've got no money, the kids always say, come on, Mum, it's all right, we can make billet cakes. And we always managed to survive somehow. But it really upset me to think of all the people that were sacrificing their sacred money, you know, for the church. People like me who, you know, barely had enough to manage their families. And, you know, other people in poor parts of the world, like those in Africa, you know, that sacrificed what little they had. And to me, here was the church just wasting all this money. And it really bothered me. And it also bothered me that, you know, this church leader who was talking about it wasn't thinking about how his words would affect the members, you know. He wasn't thinking about me struggling to pay my tithing and to feed my children and the other people. He was just there saying, you know, the temple's going to be perfect and there's this tiny floor, but we have to change it because it has to look perfect. Even though there's a vase in front of it and we can't see the tiny floor in the bottom of the stained glass window, you know, it has to be replaced. It really bothered me because I knew that my God wouldn't care more about a building than it would about people. And just the combination of these talks just really got to me and had me thinking about whether this really was Christ Church. Now, the very first thing I did after this conference session had finished was I called my mum and I told her, you know, I was just feeling really bothered. And, you know, I just told her how it upset me. And she just hung up the phone on me, which was quite upsetting. And I think that's distanced from this point onwards, as I started leading out of the church. And obviously she disagreed with that. And I can understand that she'd be upset because, and all those reasons, but yeah, this was the start of my faith crisis. So I can't remember what the subject was that I was teaching, but I Googled something and I'd found things that I'd never heard of before about the church. And the more I looked, the more I studied more. And I studying to try to prove these things wrong. I was thinking, no, this can't be true. But the more I read, the more I discovered that these things were actually true. And I asked myself the question, could it be possible that the church isn't true? And that was it. My entire world crumbled. The church and God had been my source of support through everything. Through the loss of my 5 pregnancies, both times I had the illnesses where I nearly died, my divorce, everything. Okay, so yeah, the church and God had been my source of everything. All the problems I'd had, it'd been my strength. And what really troubled me was that when my husband had lied to me, cheated on me, I felt he totally betrayed me and my family. There was emotional abuse. There was all kinds of stuff I'm not going to go into. But yeah, he had done that. And at the time I had clung to God and the church and just for strength, really. And now here was my church doing the same thing. I felt betrayed. I felt they had lied to me. They'd hidden things from me. The church was my life. It was everything. It was my complete identity. It was my purpose. I was like, so after the conference, it was the same week. And I was planning something for one of the primary lessons I was teaching. And so I was Googling for some information. Like, I don't remember now what the lesson was or what I was Googling. But I found some links to some other things. And there were a lot of things that I'd not heard before. I won't list them all because I don't want to send anybody else who's listening into a faith crisis if they haven't. You know, one of them was the different accounts of Joseph Smith's first vision that in all my 40 years at church that had never come up. So that was one of them. And then there was so many other things, And I spent hours studying online, just looking and reading and looking, trying to prove the things that I'd found out to be wrong. You know, at this point, I didn't believe them. I didn't believe they were right. And I was doing everything that I could in my power to prove them wrong. But the more I studied, the more I looked, the more I read, the more I realized that these things were true. And then, you know, I asked myself the question, could it be possible that the church isn't true? And that was it. That was when my world just crumbled then. The church had been my source of support through everything, my whole life. When I had the 5 lost pregnancies, through the illnesses and sicknesses that I had had, through my divorce, everything. You know, especially at the time when my husband had left me, you know, we'd had a few years, he'd lied to me, cheated to me. There was some emotional abuse and stuff, and I felt that he really betrayed me. And now my church was just doing the same thing. He hadn't been honest with me. You know, the church was everything. It was my complete identity, my purpose. It was everything, and I couldn't see the point of living anymore. And if it wasn't for my kids, there's a possibility that I wouldn't be here. It was real dark days. You know, I was about a week away from sitting my psychology degree final exam, and I didn't want to do that. I did it. I went on and did it, and I passed, and I got through it somehow. But just I sunk into a real, real depression. It was not pretty. And then I found an online forum that was called New Order Mormons. It was a forum that you took part in anonymously. I read about other people who had been in similar experiences to myself, and they shared their stories and they had hope. This was kind of like a lifeline for me because I felt I was the only one. I felt like I was the only one out there. Now I know there's thousands of people, but I felt I was the only one who had felt this way. So I logged on to this New Order Mormon forum. I used the identity Little Lost Sheep, and I shared my experiences, my stresses, my worries, my concerns, and I received so much support and love in return. At night when I couldn't sleep, I'd be online, and my friends were there online. People, I don't know who they were. Everyone was on there anonymously, you know, putting on their stories, so I don't know who these people were, but they were real saviours to me. So I continued to attend church for another 6 months. I didn't believe in most of it, but I tried really hard to stay. During this time, I prayed and I fasted more than I'd ever had in my entire life. I begged God to show what I should do. I felt like I was stuck in a dark tunnel, consumed fog, and I fought so hard to get out of it. I previously always felt close to God, but now felt as though I'd lost him. It felt like when you get like an interference or static on the radio and you just, you know, you can hear like little bleeps of voice and message getting through, but you just can't hear it clearly enough to work out what's being said or whatever. And like, I felt it was like this with God. There was just this static. I was trying to get through to him, and I kind of believed that he was there on the other side trying to connect to me too, but we just could not make the connection. And then there were a couple of times when I felt a deep connection, and then I'd lose it again, and I'd be searching, like, where are you, God? You know, have you left me? You know, where are you? But one of them, I felt this deep, it was like a knowledge that just came to me, and I knew it didn't come from myself, so I knew it had come from somewhere else, and I saw it as a message from God. And so this one particular time, I'd been praying, and I just felt so strongly that listening to the Spirit was more important than scripture or messages from the prophet. And this kind of blew me away for a moment, because we're always taught to, you know, follow the prophet. Don't think for yourself, just follow the prophet. He's not going to lead you away. you know, and study your scriptures, and scriptures were like literal truth. And here I was getting this message that was like listening to the spirit, you know, following that spirit, that voice that is talking to you is more important than following God, than following the prophet's words, and more important than study scripture. So, and here I was being told, so clearly, just forget all of that. Forget what you've been taught. Tune into that spirit and just follow its guidance. At this point, I went and spoke with my bishop, and I asked to be released from my primary calling that I'd been doing as primary president. And he was great. He really helped me to kind of sort out my feelings and all the angst and the emotions and things that I was going through. And, you know, I can discuss with him things that I couldn't discuss with anyone else. And he encouraged me to stay. He talked about all the good reasons for staying, and I agreed there was still a lot of good in the church, but I said to him, like, I can't teach anymore. I can't teach the things that I don't agree with. You know, I felt like a hypocrite. I'm like, you know, I can't be teaching these young children these things that you want to teach me to teach them, and I don't feel they're true. I just said, you know, you have to really call in. So he agreed to, and I tried to stay, but it was so hard. It got to the point where I'd have panic attacks just walking into the chapel. I just couldn't go every week. And so I tried to go like once every 6 weeks. Because I think as long as you attend church once every 6 weeks, they see you as an active member. So I tried to keep up my visit once every 6 weeks, but it was really hard. And then I kind of tried to go once every 3 months. And in all this time, I didn't stop searching and seeking for truth. You know, for the first time in my life, my spiritual journey had become Christ-centered. I turned away from the church and I followed Christ. While family and friends tried to convince me that I was following Satan, I knew that I was being led away from the church and towards something that was different. I searched for that truth. I trusted the promptings of the spirit that I felt, and I followed my heart and what felt right for myself. I didn't attend any other occasional visit to my LDS ward. And each time that I went, it would just reinforce to me the fact that I just did not belong there anymore. Then after a year, so around November, I really started to miss community. And I'd heard some people talking about Community of Christ on the New Order of Mormon forum that I was frequenting all the time. So I had a look online and I saw that there was actually a chapel just nearby, just down in Enfield, which is like a 20-minute drive from me. I sent them an email asking what time they met, whether it was okay to bring kids and if there was a dress code. But I never heard back, didn't get a reply. I'm not even sure if that email was in use at the time. So I didn't go. I visited some other local churches, Unitarians, just all different ones. And I only went to each one once. And although they were nice and I enjoyed the messages, they weren't what I was looking for. I knew that they were not what I was looking for. I actually had no idea what I was looking for. And whether I'd ever find what I was looking for. But I kept searching. And at this time, I'd had a complete shift in my thinking. It was though I'd taken God out of the little box that the LDS church had put him in. And God, to me, had become something. At times while I was meditating, I'd felt completely connected to the earth, saving my soul and getting to heaven, if there was one. I wanted to follow Christ's example and help everyone who was suffering to find peace and to try to heal the world. A few times I felt that I didn't. I guess I felt with its Joseph Smith background, it would just be too similar to the LDS church. And I knew I was searching for something different. A Mormon Stories podcast where John Hamer had talked about re-entering Mormonism through Community of Christ. And again, I felt the urge to attend, but I didn't. I was too scared. I don't know what I was scared of, but I was scared. Then I listened to some more Mormon Stories podcasts with John Hamer. He did a presentation on YouTube and he compared the differences between the LDS and the Community of Christ. And I really liked it, but I still couldn't muster the courage to go. So this journey continued for like, it was 3 years. I was searching, looking, visiting places, getting these promptings, go to the Community of Christ, but I didn't go. It was November 2015. It was another time. I just had an operation. I'd been having some health issues, some cancer in my uterus, so I had that removed. And I had just had my 6-week checkup from the doctors and everything was fine. Everything was, the doctor said to me, right, you've got a new lease of life. Get out there and live it. So I was like, I was like really pumped up. It was like, yeah, I, you know, put away all the sickness, all the rubbish, all the faith crises, you know, forget it all and move on, you know, find whatever it is you need to find on, to, you know, move on, find something new. So that had just happened. And then I heard about a policy that had been leaked about children of LGBT parents not being allowed to become members of the LDS Church. That was it. I knew I was completely done with the LDS Church. I'm passionate about kids. Kids are my thing. I mean, I love kids. I knew Christ loved kids. And I just, this was totally not a thing. In my mind, this was not a thing that Christ would do, that his church would do, would stop children of his parents becoming members of his church. So I knew I was completely done. And that very next outside, this little Community of Christ chapel in Enfield here in England, I paused outside for a while, took a deep breath, and like I almost turned back. I went back to the car, but I was like, no, you've come this far. Come on. This is your new lease of life. This is what you're going to go for. You've got to try it. You've been prompted. I forget how many times I've been prompted to go, and I just like, no, I'm not going. And here I was outside Enfield Chapel, this little church, and I took a deep breath and I walked inside. I was welcomed at the door by Colin the deacon. He handed me a hymn book. I come in, I take my seat on the back row, and within a few minutes of attending, a few minutes of entering the building, we start to sing "For Everyone Born a Place at the Table." And new to me, I had never heard it before, and it just, even now, it brings tears to my eyes when we sing it. It's just, I just love this song. And I just felt this, as we sang it, first time I'd ever heard it, I just felt a peace wash over me that I hadn't felt in a long, long time. I was here on this day because in my church there was no longer a place at the table for everyone. And as I listened and joined in the singing and took in every word, I knew that I had found my new home. I just knew it with that first 5 minutes of being in the building. This was where God wanted me to be. This was what I was searching for. I continued to go each week, and bit by bit I started to heal. The weekly messages were all Christ-centered. I left each week feeling like slowly re-entering all those dark, broken spaces. And it just felt good to be back in a community, you know, with people. Just a few weeks after attending, we also found out that my oldest daughter would need to have some real complicated surgery. She needed to have she had scoliosis, so her spine was curved, and she needed to go and have some surgery that would put a titanium rod screwed in the back to hold it straight. And it was a big, long operation. There were risks involved, and it just, not another thing that, you know, we've got to go through as a family. But, you know, had the support of people at community each week. How's it going? Did I need any help? And it was just so nice to be part of the community again with people who cared, like genuinely cared. It was a big operation. It took like 10 hours. It was the longest 10 hours of my life, waiting for her to come out of theatre, but all successful. And a year later, she's, you know, doing everything normally as she did before. So it all went well. But it was just the perfect timing to be back in a community. So I wasn't planning to rejoin the church, but I just cried all these messages I'd received, you know, every week, hearing about Christ and just feeling that peace and love every week was just amazing. And after about 10 months of attending, I felt that just attending, it wasn't enough anymore. I wanted to be a part of this. I mean, I had no plans, the last thing I wanted to do, but I just knew that was the next step. I needed to join this church. I wanted to do more. I wanted to become a member. And so 1 year after first walking into the chapel, I was confirmed a member. So that was a year ago, and I've been active ever since, attending services, meetings, conferences, taking sermons. Strangely, I didn't feel completely involved until last weekend. Now, last weekend, I attended a priesthood weekend at Dunfield House. Now, the reasons for not feeling completely involved was nothing to do with the members or Community of Christ. I concluded it was me. I just didn't feel completely like I belonged. But then there was a change that I needed to make within myself. I hadn't been viewing myself as a member of Community of Christ. My identity had become me as an ex-LDS person trying to make Community of Christ work for me. And I, on reflection of last week, that's kind of how I felt where I was. And so then I attended the priesthood weekend, and that's where a complete shift took place. I arrive exhausted on the Friday evening following a day at work and about 4.5-5 hour drive to get there in the dark. So when I arrived on this Friday evening of the weekend, I was exhausted. I didn't recognise that many people, and kind of felt a little bit out of it. But Sue Norton was amazing. Maybe she saw me tired and treated me with a hug, and she showed me my room and she helped me to make my bed. Saturday morning faces, but I still felt unsure of my place. You know, here I was, previous LDS person, a woman, and I'd been invited to a priesthood weekend. You know, I'd never been to a priesthood meeting before, especially as everybody else that was there already had the priesthood, and they were meeting in their groups, and I wasn't sure how I fit into this. I enjoyed the different sessions that I attended on the Saturday. It was a day of learning for me, a day of reflection. A lot of self-reflection was going on. I was thinking, is this right? Do I fit in here? And then I get some fresh air. And I stood in the Peace Garden, just thinking over the events of this day, this Saturday. And I asked God, I said, is this where you want me to be? And then I went back in. We had lunch. And going into lunch, so I entered into the dining room. I went to sit at a table, and all the seats were taken. And I went to the next table. Is anyone sitting here? All the seats were taken. It was my fault because I'd been out in the Peace Garden talking with God instead of getting in there to get the food. So I'd asked about five tables. Is anyone sitting here? And they were like, no, sorry, there's not a space. The seat's taken. And in that moment, yeah, I was thinking, you know, do I really fit in here? Is this where I really belong? And then Richard James and Joey called me over and they said, here, actually said, you know, there's a place at our table for you. I enjoyed the rest of the day, but inside there was still this uncertainty. You know, is this where I fit in? You know, do I really belong here? And it was troubling me a bit. And then that evening, we took part in a spiritual practice that involved giving other people positive affirmations. We were each given a little pile of 8 sticky post-it notes and a pair of affirmation for somebody else and stick it on their back. I easily wrote out 3 for other people. And then I sat there thinking, I don't know anyone else. You know, I've got 5 more post-its to write, but I can't write a positive affirmation for anyone else. I don't know these people. And I was sure that I wasn't going to get many back. And then at the end of the exercise, I retrieved 13 messages from others that were on my back. And these were some of the messages. You are fun. You breathe new air. You're a great mum. You're amazing. I love your willingness to be involved. You are strong. Even though at times you may not feel strong. I love your honesty and enthusiasm. You're a blessing. You are an inspiration and a role model to me. You are brave. I love your strength and courage. Your courageousness shines through. I think you're really brave. Sorry. You have great courage. I've been so unsure of myself and who I was and how I'm. And people I hardly knew had seen these things in me. I read these notes over and slowly I started to believe them and this shift within me. The next morning after breakfast, where I sat thinking over, I went down the hill to walk the labyrinth. It was a beautiful morning. Nobody else was around. And as I entered the labyrinth, I spoke of God. I went over my concerns and insecurities and I asked for his guidance. As I reached the centre of the labyrinth, I felt an outpouring of peace and love. And as I left the labyrinth, I asked God to show to stay with me, to show me what he wanted me to do. I knew that he had led me here. He had led me out the LDS church to here, to this moment, for a reason. And I wanted to know what it was that he wanted from me. And as I entered back into the house, the spiritual practice session for the morning had already started. And we stood to sing the words, "This is our story, this is our song." And as we started to sing that song, tears just poured down my face. I knew I was exactly where God wanted to be, wanted me to be. I was part of Community of Christ, very much part of this our, you know, this is our story, this is our song. And this was my story too. This was my song. I was part of this R. This was my community. Another song touched me and had me crying too. And that's "You Have Come Up to the Lakeshore, seeking neither the wise nor the wealthy, but only asking for me to follow. Sweet Lord, you have looked into my eyes, kindly smiling, you've called out my name. On the sand, I've abandoned my small boat. Now with you, I will seek other seas." These words just really hit me. I'm not wise and I'm certainly not wealthy, but God's called me for some reason to abandon my small boat, my old church, and to seek other seas. Another hymn that touched me was "Draw the circle wide, draw it wider still. Let this be our song. No one stands alone, standing side by side, draw the circle wide." I'd entered Community of Christ 2 years ago, completely broken. Ken, in his priesthood session, completely accepted as I am in all my inadequacies and insecurities. I'm no longer standing alone. I have no idea what the future holds, but I'm ready. I'm ready and I'm excited. It took me exactly 5 years to get from crisis to this point of, I don't know how to describe it. I just feel completely healed and just ready to give. And I hope I can give back even just a tiny bit of what Community of Christ has given to me. I share hope to others who might be feeling they're stuck in the old church and to leave, but feeling scared or don't know if they'll find happiness anywhere else or whatever they're feeling. You know, I share this story today to offer hope and to invite anyone who feels the desire to just give Community of Christ a try. It could be life-changing.
Allison, that was a wonderful story. I'm still crying a little bit for you and just listening to it. I so appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable. And I, like I said, I've only met you a couple times and I had no idea the struggles that you went through in so many aspects of your life, not just with the LDS church, but in your personal life and so many things. And I am so grateful that your journey has led you here and led you with us. Because I see you as someone who is, yeah, someone to look up to, someone to admire and inspire. And I know that your words have inspired me today, and I'm sure that they're also going to inspire our listeners. So thank you so much for being part of the Project Zion podcast and for sharing your story.
Thank you. It's been good to share it. It kind of feels like therapy. It's like, that's it. It's all in the past and I'm ready to move on with Community of Christ. It's exciting.
And we are so happy to have you. So happy to have you. Well, Allison, until our paths meet again, and I certainly hope that they do, I'm just really, really grateful for you and your story. And I can't wait to see what the future holds.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.